Hello, and welcome to Ask the Mayor here on WBAA News. I'm your host, Emily Seiberg. This week, our guest on the show is West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis. Thanks so much, as always, for being with us. As you're listening, you can keep emailing questions for Mayor Dennis to ask, that's A-S-K, at WBAA.org. Good afternoon, Mayor.
How are you doing, Emily?
I'm doing well. Welcome to the show. Welcome to 2021.
Yeah, geez. I can't even remember thinking about that when I was a kid. It was so far in the future.
Well, the future is now. And I also have to start by wishing you a happy belated birthday.
I know. I'm an adult now.
You are an adult.
Sort of.
I did want to start the show off today by touching on some of the events of yesterday, and just to start off, to get your response to what happened as a mob overtook the Capitol building yesterday afternoon.
I'm no different than anybody else. I was shocked. I would never have anticipated that in this country. You know, but the shock is somewhat softened because of some of the behavior, you know, of our elected executive over the past 4 years. I would be naive to say that it wasn't completely out of the realm of possibility, but it just doesn't seem like the country that I grew up in. I mean, one thing we've learned in America, that violence will never succeed in overruling the will of the people. You know, democracy is a really big deal in the United States of America. And from our perspective, you know, we were getting media feeds as it was happening. The president of the United States was encouraging people to basically supersede democracy. And if that isn't the biggest oxymoronic involvement I've ever seen in my life for this country, it's, and I haven't been around that long, even though I did have my 62nd birthday. It just came across as such a shock. And as I was watching these things unfold, the complete for our history, for those who have fought and sacrificed their lives for our freedom, for those that have, chosen careers in law enforcement, chosen careers in medicine, for those that have really done so much to bring our country to where it is, for those that have fought for civil rights, for those that have stood up for the underprivileged, the underserved. To have that mess coming from the president of the United States, it wasn't just offensive. It broke my heart. I'm an elected guy. You know, I was picked by the citizens of West Lafayette to serve, and I take that duty very seriously. I am a public servant, and I can tell you straight up, I have never worked in the private sector. All of my life, I've been a public servant. And I say that with pride. It's an honor to have been elected as mayor of my hometown, but even more importantly, to be able to service. That type of behavior, that type of encouragement from the president, that absolute disdain for humanity shocks me. I know that reality TV and some of the things that we have a culture of, as a culture has sort of we've gravitated towards might make that within the frame of reference, I guess, of horrific behavior, but I never thought that it would come to fruition like it did yesterday. And what does that mean for us in the future? Does that mean now that there will be pockets of subversive groups within our country that will start taking advantage of public gatherings to express their agendas, to express their feelings, to express their belief system and how things should be. And again, putting on my former career hat, does that mean that security now is going to even get more restrictive? Does that mean that we will be buttoning down even more on some of our assumed freedoms in our country? I don't know. But just based upon what we saw yesterday and based upon where it took place, I mean, you know, every year a group of us go to Washington, D.C., and we visit some of the iconic structures of our country and of our history and what are basically the symbols of our freedoms. To see those defaced and destroyed in the way that they were was just, it was shocking. You know, I mean, I know at some point in time this could potential of being compared to watching the jets flying to the towers in New York. It, in my opinion, and again, history will show how this goes, it had that type of catastrophic, it will have that kind of catastrophic effect on our country. President-elect Biden has a lot of work to do, you know, and I think that we all need to unite as a country to stand behind him and make sure that those difficult tasks have the support of all of America to get us back on track with what's best for this country.
So to that point, Congress did meet again last night to continue and mm-hmm. then complete the certification process. You know, what can you say to people who still have doubts about the outcome of this election? Has that been put to rest?
Yes. I mean, by the process that's been empowered by our Constitution and by, you know, the rules and laws of our country, you know, President-elect Biden is our president and he needs to be treated appropriately with the appropriate amount of respect and with the reality that he is going to lead us for the next 4 years. It seems as though that we have really stepped into an area where gray is now black and white, you know, where opinions and feelings and individual convictions are what are the rule of the day. And that's not how we got here. You know, America has always been a unified country that seems to have focused on trying to make sure that we as a collective do the right thing. You know, we have had problems. We have problems with race. We've had problems with, economic stratifications that have prohibited people from experiencing, you know, a decent quality of life. We have had our problems as a country. But one of the things that we've always been able to do is to pull together and get through some of these things. The examples that we saw yesterday challenged that. But I have no doubt in my mind and in my heart that we'll be better, that we're going to improve. And this will be another one of those examples that will say, this is something that should never happen again. We have a lot of things going on right now with COVID, with the economic impact of COVID, the adverse economic impact of COVID, obviously. We need to get our stuff together and get back on track as a country. And, you know, whether the leadership be at the presidential level, at the mayoral level, at the council level, it's imperative that we understand that we need to unify and to get behind each other and to get us back on track and get moving forward and make sure we deal with the problems that are currently at hand and not unify to create more problems that are going to be more challenging to solve.
You are listening to Ask the Mayor here on WBAA News. I'm your host, Emily Seiberg, and we are talking with West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis. So we got some big news this week from the NCAA. Mm-hmm. Essentially, the entirety of March Madness is happening in Indiana, and that's going to include Mackey Arena here in West Lafayette. What can you tell us right now about, I guess, early stages of planning? How involved were you in the discussions leading up to this? What was your input?
Well, just basically to say, let's see what we need to do to get it done. You know, economically, it's always great to have a national event in your hometown. I mean, that does nothing but create, you know, opportunities for businesses to grow. And after COVID, you know, anything we can do to sort of give our businesses, our local businesses. But what we don't know is what kind of umbrella of COVID are we going to be living under? What are the restrictions going to be? What's going to be some of the, guidelines and requirements and restrictions that are going to be put upon us by our healthcare professionals? That is a big challenge. What's that going to mean for crowd sizes? What's that going to do for restaurants and bars? The hope is that it's going to be, or more open than we are now, hopefully with the vaccines coming out and with the folks that are at greatest risk being first in line, that will allow for some easing of the restrictions. As a rule, obviously, yes, a national event does bring status to a community. Having Purdue in our city has always been sort of a badge of honor, but now that we're in a position to be able to showcase our community, and that includes Lafayette as well in Tippecanoe County, it's a pretty cool thing. But the hope is that We will be in a greater position to do so with having some vision or some sight lines clear about when COVID's going to be less of a traumatic event for us all.
Do you think there's a benefit for West Lafayette, even if a large number of fans aren't necessarily allowed to come?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. You know, one thing they often do when they're doing sports broadcasts is they announce where they're doing it from.
Sure.
The other thing that they do is they give panoramic views of the community that they're hosting these large events in, and that's a great advertisement for, you know, all of Lafayette, all greater Lafayette, and I think that's a great advertisement. And then for us here specifically in West Lafayette, you know, we've done a lot of work over the past decade to develop our city to give us more of an urban look, to, you know, obviously, you know, $150 million State Street project and things of that nature, and the investment that we've had on State Street, you know, allows for us to have a visual boast about what we've been able to do. And that's always pretty cool. The other thing is that, you know, a national event, whether it be a sport event or a political event or something like that, as we witnessed last night, presents its challenges as well. You know, if the crowds are significant, if, you know, we have more visitors in our hotels and restaurants, that puts a little bit of a burden on local government to make sure that we do the right things with crowd control, with traffic flow, with the hygiene of the community, making sure the services are in place for those that might need them. So it sort of cuts both ways. But, you know, for whatever downside somebody might perceive about having a national event in your community, the upside of it is tenfold. It really is a point of status.
So ongoing COVID-19 vaccinations are top of mind right now as well. And the mm-hmm. state rolled out more steps in that process, more eligible groups this week. Mm-hmm. We actually had a listener, Barbara, write in specifically for you a few weeks back to express her thanks for you, also to express concerns about when she and her husband could get vaccinated, as she says they're both 84 and not in the mm-hmm. best of health. And, well, yesterday it was announced people 80 years of age and older can start registering for vaccinations tomorrow. We talked with Tippecanoe County Health Department Administrator Kayla Hochstetler this morning about this next round, and they want to make sure this age group is signing up, that they know how to sign up. That's very important. You know, how can the city help facilitate getting the word out as these older groups kind of start coming online and are able to be vaccinated?
Well, the cool thing is that a lot of that information is pretty standardized. So once we get the actual crafted document, we can go and post it on our website. But, and I say this with respect, a lot of folks, there are certain age demographics where there's sort of that break in connectivity with technology. And I'm not trying to be an ageist or anything, but their first reaction isn't to go online and research certain things. So by us having conversations like on WBAA, which mm-hmm. is awesome, and through other media outlets, that will help people understand where they're going to be disseminated from, and also the hours of operation. But the other thing is that there are still going to be the safety requirements, and people taking the necessary precautions is critical when these things occur. I know that usually, and again, I could be misguided here, but usually it's a two-shot process. Mm-hmm. You get a first shot, and then you have to come back to get a second one after a period of time. I think that there needs to be an understanding that until the vaccination is done, you're still subject to exposure, so you need to be careful about that. The other thing is about standing in line waiting. You know, obviously, there's going to be multiple locations where the shots are going to be given from, I mean, I would hope. So make sure that you, you know, abide by the appropriate safety precautions that we've now been living under for about, you know, 6 months when it comes to COVID transmission. Keep your distance, wash your hands, and wear your mask. But it's good news, and it's news that everybody's been sort of waiting for. You know, I think we're all wanting to get back to some semblance of normalcy. We want to make sure that, you know, that the businesses that have taken the hit get that first rush of enthusiasm when people go in there and start eating in restaurants and drinking in bars again. But we are patient enough to wait until we have our vaccine before we start acting that way. And I think that's some of the things that some of the healthcare professionals have been talking about, is that because we're having these conversations about COVID coming to an end, regardless of how protracted that end might be, people are now starting to kind of lighten up on their self-discipline when it comes to masking, hand washing, and distancing. So all of you out there in radio land, please remember, it ain't over till it's over.
So another group that's eligible now to receive vaccinations are first responders. You know, that includes fire and law enforcement, emergency medical services. So how is the city helping facilitate that process? You know, how are you involved in making sure that that happens?
Well, our police and firefighters, our police officers and firefighters are in the process of getting their shots now. I know our fire chief has already had his, and he told me it didn't hurt. So that's a good sign. That's a good sign because we all know how firemen cry, right?
That is not something I am aware of.
I'm just, as a retired policeman, I'm empowered to say those things because my staff will let me know how wrong it was to say that. Anyway, but it is. It's starting that process. And I think that, you know, I think back to the days when I was in a squad car on the street. The unanticipated interaction with people sometimes can lead you to being exposed to things that you might not be really willing or ready to be exposed to. And it could be something as innocent as somebody asking directions. It could be as innocent as somebody, you know, having the need for emergency medical assistance. It's what emergency services folks do. And even though we have the necessary safety equipment in our vehicles, in our trucks, and on our person, still that casual exposure can still occur. And I always use the example of after COVID first came into town, it had been around for a couple of months, I was in the grocery store and I had my mask on, I was doing what I was supposed to do, and somebody came up and gave me a hug. And, you know, that's really nice and I appreciate it, but and afterwards you're thinking, okay, isn't that exactly what we're not supposed to do? So, you know, now knowing that we have the vaccine, that it's going to be, you know, disseminated to folks that are at the tip of the spear, as it were, that's a relief. But the bigger relief is knowing that it's here and we eventually can all have that opportunity to get ourselves vaccinated.
And it looks like Happy Hollow will continue to be used as a COVID testing site, but it could potentially be used as a vaccine site as well. That could possibly be an option down the line.
Yes. We're looking at that as an option. Tim Clark, our facilities director, is trying to look into seeing what we might need to do in order to accommodate that. Obviously, the building is not ours. It still belongs to the school corporation. So obviously we'll be working in conjunction with West Lafayette Community School Administration as well. The big challenge, I think, with a lot of the distribution of the vaccines is the temperature requirement and then making sure that we have some semblance of protocol for the numbers of people that can attend, the groups that we're targeting to get vaccinated, and just other kind of, you know, general protocols to make things safe for those that are actually distributing the vaccines and for those that are the recipients of it. Because that stuff can always get, it can get challenging.
So students will be back on campus in just a few weeks. They've had a lengthier than usual absence. You know, it's kind of another version of the start of the school year. Everyone's coming back into West Lafayette from many different places. And COVID numbers in our county will start to reflect that larger population being present again. You know, just more broadly, what kind of an adjustment period are you anticipating as students are returning, settling back in? It's officially winter now. You know, those gatherings, they're really, you know, largely just going to be inside now. We're kind of out of that transitional weather period. You know, what are you preparing for?
Well, we try to regulate behavior that's so intuitive for humans. I mean, we like to be with each other. We like to socialize. We like to have fun. And that changes from age demographic to age demographic. You know, the ages from 0 to about 26 are the experimental ones. And there is a recognition that we didn't have in the first blush of COVID. The recognition is that you can be really young and you can get really sick. Age and strength and overall health doesn't necessarily mean that you won't have an adverse reaction to COVID. that helps us when we're trying to market public safety, when we're trying to market public health. But we will always have the challenges of those that just don't necessarily feel that those rules apply to them. So for us, having the students back, the really good thing is that President Daniels and his administration with the Purdue Pledge have done a great job in making sure that the students, that when they come to campus, they're prepared, they understand what they need to do, and those that have been here and are returning understand and know what they need to do. It makes our job a lot easier. But again, we will always have those challenges about folks that are just not necessarily thinking right and are going to do stuff, and that might. But the other thing is that we need to keep cognizant of the other aspect of COVID. And that's still a reality for us. And that's our medical facilities, our hospitals, and our urgent care areas. Those areas are very subject to the influence of the numbers of people who are sick. And, you know, a lot of our doctors and a lot of our nurses have been, you know, working exhaustively to try and make sure that we're being well taken care of. And really, high fives and those in the medical and healthcare profession. So we need to be aware of that. You know, we get a huge surge in numbers again. That's going to take away a lot of bed space and a lot of medical staff in our hospitals. And that's one of those unknown, or I guess not unknown, but that's one of those issues, or a secondary issue of dealing with COVID, dealing with any kind of pandemic, is that it takes up a lot of bed space, and it really does make some of the other things that happen just naturally, you know, with humans, a challenge to deal with. So it'll be something that we can predict. We are always enthusiastic about having our students come back to town. The good news is, like I said before, is they kind of know the do's and don'ts because of COVID. The challenges that we have is to make sure that they listen to those and adhere to them as best as possible.
So let's talk about the new City Hall, the Marjoram Woo-hoo. Government and Community Center. Mayor Dennis, yep. Let's remind everyone listening who City Hall is named after.
Sonia Marjoram, she was the mayor of the city of West Lafayette when I was a little kid. Not to age Sonia. But no, she was mayor in the city for over 20 years, and she was instrumental in providing the foundation that allowed for us to get to where we are today. I went to high school with two of her sons, Eric and Larry. I played football in West Lafayette with Larry. And back in those days, Mayor Marjoram wasn't Mayor Marjoram yet. She was Mrs. Marjoram then. And we used to have football dinners at her house before varsity games on Friday evenings. And even back in those days, she was one of the kindest, sweetest moms/football moms/women I've ever met. And she carried that same philosophy as mayor. You know, and I think that when you think back to the days where she was serving, there weren't a lot of women mayors in the state of Indiana. Not even very many women elected officials. And she and others, you know, started to lay the groundwork for some of the ways that we are now empowering elected officials to do things today. Sonia broke a lot of the glass ceilings and a lot of the barriers for women when it came to holding elected office, especially elected executives. And for that, I mean, we are honored that the family allowed for us to name our City Hall after Sonia. I actually had the honor of speaking to Sonia when she was in hospital and asked her permission. I asked her personally. And, you know, Sonia, if you know Sonia, she's like, "Oh, John." And I said, can we please? And she said, "Well, that's flattering." She was very humbled by it. But
and now
I'm
here
glad
it is.
That we had that moment. And here it is. And I'm glad I had that moment with her.
So you and I have talked before about how used you are to moving City Hall spaces. You are experts at the art of moving, living out of a box. Yes. So are you 100% moved in? Are you 98% moved in? Are you much are you moved in?
Well, we are physically here, but we are now in the process. My dad was a military guy, so we moved around a lot when I was a little kid. We moved here when I was four, but we did a lot of moving around since then. And I remember when we moved here, my mom said, moving is the easy part. The hard part is settling in. So we are in the process of settling in.
Okay.
And the cool thing is that we are now seeing a lot of stuff that we hung on to that we don't need to hang on to anymore. So there should be massive piles of rubbish in front of City Hall that our street department's going to be able to take to the recycling center for us. The other thing is that it gave us an opportunity to design a building that allowed for us to have an open floor concept to where we can communicate and interact easier with each other. But probably the coolest thing is my office. I have an office.
You have an office.
That wasn't a classroom. That wasn't, you know, a hallway. That
you deserve that, I feel.
it's my fifth home, and it's cool.
Yeah. You know?
So, but it really is. And I've got a great view of Purdue and a great view of our downtown. I can look out my window and see some of the work that we've done on our downtown, some of the developments that we've had. It's a pretty neat thing to have. It's a pretty nice place to be. You need to come by, Emily.
Okay, I will, Mayor. We've talked also about West Lafayette's new wellness center. So it was announced at the end of December that despite plans to open the center at the start of January, due to construction delays related to COVID-19, the opening has been delayed until February. So first, if you could kind of articulate how the delays were related to COVID-19, was this just a staffing issue or what was the situation?
No, a lot of it had to do with just making sure that we had the necessary barriers between spots. I mean, a lot of stuff that happens with COVID is physical. I mean, there are certain things that we have to put up, and you can see it if you come to City Hall here. We had to put up plexiglass in between workspaces to prevent the transmission of the virus. We had to have hand washing stations, those kind of things. That's also what needed to take effect in our wellness center. The other thing is that a lot of what we do in a wellness center or any facility can be influenced by the weather. And if it's extremely cold, some of the stuff that you want to do can't necessarily be done. Specifically, you're dealing with pouring concrete and that kind of carry on. So all is part of what's given us some of our challenges on abiding by a timeline. But the important thing is that when you the equipment that we're dealing with in there, the fact that it is a wellness center, the fact that there's going to be people working out, you know, that is why we have focused so much time and attention on making sure that it's going to have the necessary safety protocols. And some of that is just making sure how many people are in and out and the necessary safety equipment, such as hand washing stations, plenty of wipes to make sure we can sanitize the equipment and those sort of things so that people can go there safely and have a good workout.
All right. That's our time for today. Mayor Dennis, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
You can find this program at our website, WBAA.org, along with an archive of our shows with the mayors of Lafayette, West Lafayette, Crawfordsville, and Frankfort. Send us your questions, as always, for all four mayors to ask at WBAA.org. Thanks for listening, and have a great rest of the day.